And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. We have a lot to talk about today, Dave. This last week was a dramatic week in a kind of an understated way. Nobody invaded the Capitol. But almost all of the countries of the governments of the world agreed on a report about the climate, pointing out that in no uncertain terms do we the crisis is upon us. We're in it. We're not waiting for it. We're in it. And we have to take drastic action to not get out of it. We can't get out of it, but to mitigate it. We had the infrastructure bill passed in the Senate, now going on to the House. There was a war in the Senate. There's another war in the House. The Afghan war is finally, it looks like, coming to an end. The American government is finally, it looks like, pulling out. A 20-year war is about to end in the defeat of the American-backed forces. We got a lot going on. The census came out, the numbers that showed that if you look at it politically, 61 House districts lost population. And of those 61 House districts, 35 are held by, are represented by Republican congressmen. So their seats are up for grabs. Or, they have to do something about their districts. So there's a lot that happened this week.
And there's a lot of this is interrelated. When you talk about the census, we're talking about the fact that people are moving to the cities and away from the country, which has the effect of what you said. When they get to the cities, they have different needs. Among those needs are infrastructure needs, mass transit needs that are covered by the infrastructure bill.
Housing,
things like that. So we have all of those things have some effect. You talk about the Afghan war. It was a different kind of attack. It was an attack that we're coming on the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attack, and it was in some ways analogous, where you had people who wanted to live in pre-modern times and avoid what the modern world brings and the needs of the modern world, which happen to also include more taxing situations for the environment. Versus the modernity of things. And, in America, we have the rural versus the urban, where you have that split, too, where people want to go back and have simpler times and things like that. So
if we deal with the Afghan war, the people who wanted to go back to the 12th century, the Taliban, before them Al-Qaeda, these religious people who organized themselves to impose religious law on civil society, these were all allies of the United States government. They all came to power and were originally organized as political forces by the United States government in the Cold War to defeat the Soviets. It was all a scheme really hatched by Brzezinski, Carter's national security advisor, who wanted to hand the Soviets a black eye, wanted to give the Soviets their own Vietnam in Afghanistan. And when the communist government of Afghanistan, because Afghanistan was a Soviet, not satellite, but client state for only about 40 years. And after about 40 years, they finally enacted a law granting women the right to an education. This sparked a religious revolt. Brzezinski said, we can seize on this religious revolt and kick the Soviets out of Afghanistan. And that's exactly what American policy was. and the communist government, which, by the way, was the only group of secularists in the country, ultimately was defeated, although 3 or 4 years after the Soviets withdrew. And then a civil war among all the American allies broke out, which is just now coming to a head with the victory of the most backward of them, the Taliban. But this represents a staggering moral, political, and economic defeat for the United States government in a cause they never should have been involved in. It was never a good policy to begin with.
Well, I'm reminded of two things. One, my good friend, the late great mentor, Bob Munley, would always say to me, "Do you remember in Sherlock Holmes, where Sherlock first met Dr. Watson, what Dr. Watson was doing?" And the answer to that question is he was recovering from his wounds in Afghanistan.
Right.
The old British Empire, yeah, back in the 1870s or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And to bring it up to more modern times, there's that iconic movie, The Princess Bride. And there's the scene with Wallace Shawn in it where he says the two great mistakes of history are to challenge a Sicilian where life is on the line, or to get involved in a land war in Asia.
Well, that seems to be the trend of American foreign policy right now in challenging China.
Yeah.
I can't understand what the ultimate result of this challenge is going to be. Either you get along with 20% of the world's population, or you go to war with them. It's one or the other. You can't have both. But the American government under Trump, and now apparently under Biden, seems to think you can have both. You can go to war and you can be at peace. I don't know what world they're living in.
Well, you go back to the seeds of Afghan, but we did have the Taliban sheltering Osama bin Laden.
I understand that. But Osama bin Laden is an American creation who then turned against us.
Well,
you got to remember that.
Yeah, and that's something that we're being reminded of. If it isn't Osama bin Laden, it is the Taliban, the saying that they use is Americans have the watches, but we have the time. They are singularly focused on maintaining this backward culture. That is all that they want to do. The difference being that Al Qaeda wanted to spread it to the rest of the world, and the Taliban, at least as they were more or less content to maintain in Afghanistan and would have a problem spreading it. Now I don't know.
Would you say Trump is a Taliban type because he's only interested in Christian religious law ruling in the United States? He doesn't care about spreading it?
Well, I don't think Trump cares about Christian law. He just cares about power.
His base is the Christian nationalists. They do.
I've often told a friend of mine, I said, that's their American Taliban.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's what Sharia law, Christian Sharia law, type of things. So, But
I want to point out the cost of this Afghan war. The cost of the Afghan war. And not only the Afghan war, but all of these anti-terror, so-called anti-terror wars in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Yemen, in Libya, in Iraq, of course. The cost of these wars is going to be $14 trillion. $14 trillion is what the United States Treasury is going to come up with, or has already come up with. The costs don't stop because the war ends, because we have a lot of veterans who are going to live till the middle of the century who have to be taken care of, who were wounded in the war, severely injured in the war. That's part of the cost of the war. In addition, 37 million people were displaced, made refugees, causing all kinds of trouble all over the world with refugee crises. 335,000 civilians were directly killed in combat. 800,000 were killed with all kinds of collateral reasons, but as a result of the war. Climate change was significantly impacted. by the war. And the American Defense Department is one of the world's top greenhouse gas emitters. Civil liberties and human rights took a back seat from the time of the Patriot Act forward, which is part of the war.
You know,
nothing good about this. Nothing good.
You know, you can make, I think I could make a good book out of the consequence of the 2000 election in America, because so many of these things followed that. Number one, there's a question as to whether a Gore administration would have ignored the threats of Osama bin Laden, whether the attack would have happened. It may have happened anyway, but the American response would have been different.
We wouldn't have gone to war in Iraq.
That's true. First of all, in Afghanistan, what they probably should have done, and it'd still be befuddling, is that when they had Osama bin Laden trapped at Tora Bora, they should have taken him out, declared victory, and gotten out of there. But as you just said, they decided to go to war in Iraq on that. And then, of course, we Al Gore was the environmental president, or going to be the environmental president. A lot of what we're seeing now would not have occurred because we would have had a different environmental policy.
That's right.
We would have had a different...
We might not have had California burning down.
Yeah, we would have had a different politic. We would have had a different Supreme Court because George Bush got to appoint Roberts and Alito to the court. So a lot of these things, and you go back, you know, these little quirks in history. You know, if Ralph Nader had not run, you could say all of this wouldn't have happened, or you could make a case for it in any event. You just see how these things kind of play out. But, you know, again, back to Afghanistan, it's interesting how the parties are lining up. People are saying this is, as you've mentioned, it's a disaster and that we can't get out. The fact is, if we're there another 100 years, you're not going to have another it's not going to make a difference, probably.
Yeah, if you're there another 100 years, instead of $17 trillion, you can pay $35 trillion.
But the...
and get nothing.
But the liberals are all worried about what happens to the women in Afghanistan. Because what this is...
Well, that's what started this to begin with.
It's a war on women. It's been a war on women. And we see that in the United States, too, with the conservative movement. It's a war on women over the abortion issue or women or other rights that women have. So all of these things tend to follow. And we still, you know, we still don't have the full course of history as to be able to analyze everything and all the consequences of that.
Meanwhile, the Democrats are trying to pass an infrastructure bill.
Right.
Understanding infrastructure writ large, understanding that infrastructure is not merely a hole in the wall, in a hill to make a tunnel. Infrastructure is also child care so that you can go to work, as much as a subway is infrastructure that helps you to get to work. You don't need public transport except to service shopping and going to work. So... Why is it that you don't have to have schools to take care of kids to help people go to work? It seems to me it's exactly the same thing. So the Congress is trying to pass it. Our man Toomey, he voted against even the Republican-supported infrastructure bill.
Yeah. He calls himself a member of the Club for Growth, but it's basically the Club for No Growth.
Yeah, he was the chairman of the Club for Growth.
Yeah.
Don't forget that, before he became a senator.
But he's not running again.
Thank God.
He's not running again. But, he voted against infrastructure. But,
well, only 17, I guess, Republican senators voted for their bill, which was, if you look at it, the truth is they say it's a trillion-dollar bill. It's not. It's not a trillion-dollar bill. It only has $500 billion in new money, and that's over 10 years. That's hardly anything. That goes nowhere near meeting the needs even of just rebuilding the roads.
But now we have this war within the Democratic Party that's been simmering under the surface between the progressive wing and the more moderate wing. And we've had this argument going on now. The 2018 elections where the Democrats went ahead and said, look, the moderates were the ones that brought us to power. And then the 2020 election, where a lot of them wound up losing, and reducing the Democratic majority to less than a handful in the House. And by the way, this week they found out that one of these swing districts in Wisconsin, the Democratic incumbent is not going to run. So they're going to have another, they're going to have some problem there. But we see a great amount of politicking from two sides that might wind, you know, Biden was given credit for having this huge victory, that he got it through the Senate on a bipartisan basis, like he said he was going to do. Trump always touted infrastructure and never even proposed anything. You know, he was going to be the great builder. And it was all phony. It was all a bluff because he didn't know how to put anything together to do anything. And he certainly didn't know how to manage it. And now the Democrats,
which is all it takes to know how to build, managing and putting together.
Right. And now the Democrats are seemingly intent on snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. The progressives say it's all well and good that you passed the first bill, but we have this second bill, this that has to go through reconciliation. And that's the bigger bill. And that's the one that you were just talking about, where it's human infrastructure, human capital, rather than physical infrastructure and physical capital. But they're the things that are popular among people, that they want to have better education. They want to expand the health care. They want to do a whole host of things.
Well, among the things that are in that bill are things against that challenge the climate crisis, that try to cope with the climate crisis. The first bill doesn't have almost anything in it about that.
Right. I think the only thing the first bill has is, for instance, building out more electric charging stations. That's a big deal, because if you're going to improve highways and bridges, you're going to have cars running on them. And the question is, were they going to be cars run by gasoline or cars run by electricity?
Right. But I mean, the climate report that was just issued makes it clear you can't have internal combustion engines. You just can't have them and have human life. It's just the two don't go together.
Right. So the progressives, the AOC wing of the party, is saying we're not going to vote for this bill and put it into law unless you first pass the second bill by reconciliation and have to push that down through the throat of the Senate by the barest of margins. And now there's a group in the House of 9 members, which are enough to scuttle the bill, who's saying...
Four members are enough to scuttle the bill.
Yeah, who say, look, we're not going to vote for the bill, for this bill, unless you put it up for a vote. You have to vote on this.
No, what they're saying is they're not going to consider the bill unless the Senate passed bill is signed into law.
Well,
that has to happen first. Right. Then they'll first consider the bill.
Yeah. So it's.
And by the way, in considering the bill, it's not at all clear that either Sinema or Manchin, if it gets to the Senate, will vote for the bill.
Right. So, although I think they're going to vote for something, but they want to chop it down.
Nobody knows why.
Yeah, and there's things that they need. Because West Virginia certainly needs infrastructure.
Sinema is on record for years supporting parts of the bill that she now says she won't vote for.
Yeah.
And people from Arizona say you can talk to your blue in the face. She doesn't change her position, and she doesn't explain it.
Right.
Well, in the movies, when you see things like that, there's always corruption involved. That's the movies.
Yeah. So, and in the meanwhile, we have all these things that are still surrounding the election and voting rights and what have you that aren't being taken up. And then we have the crazies in the Republican Party. By the way, I'm surprised that we're here on the air because Friday was supposed to have been reinstatement day.
And Friday Donald the Trump- 13th? They chose Friday the 13th as reinstatement day? That's what, I mean, that's macabre.
Well, if you've seen these people, this group of people, you know, Mike Lindell, going on about the election and the election fraud, and we find out that there's an election official from Colorado that attended his bizarre dog and pony show and caused it's going to cost the county thousands of dollars because she's leaked the codes out.
The county clerk who was responsible for administering the election in this county, Mesa County in Colorado, leaked the secure codes that keep the voting secret and don't allow people to break in and hack it. She leaked the codes to QAnon, and she put it up on QAnon's site. And now they're talking about arresting her. And, of course, one of the things that has to happen automatically is all the Mesa County voting machines have to be junked and they have to be replaced. That's a lot of money.
Well, they've already have to junk and replace the voting machines in Arizona.
All of Arizona.
Crazies.
Yeah.
Crazies. And in Pennsylvania, we have that threat of having to do that. The state Senate is still trying to make that happen, get their hands on the voting machines in
especially this with the one senator out in the middle.
Mastriano
who wants to run for governor, right?
Yeah.
He thinks this is his ticket to being the governor. And who knows? But it may be his ticket to getting the nomination.
Yeah, and all of these things. Meanwhile,
and Mastriani, by the way, is a former strategy instructor at the United States War College who is a big supporter of Christian nationalism and Christian Sharia law.
We're back on that again.
Yeah, these things are interrelated.
These things are all interrelated. Yep. And we keep getting into these, what in normal times would be considered to be nonsense, but in these times are serious problems and serious attacks on democracy that we have to worry about. And then you talked about the census and in Pennsylvania, where most of the counties lost population. We see this migration from the
almost all the rural counties,
rural into the urban counties.
Yeah.
The big gainers were Philadelphia and the counties around Philadelphia and in the Lehigh Valley type of things.
Yeah, but in the state legislature, you don't see the state legislators trying to figure out proper laws to aid the people who have migrated into the cities.
No, they don't want to because they regard those people as being the others.
Yeah, those are the others. In my county, Susquehanna County, came out on top in terms
brutal.
Of how many people got, disappeared. 11.2% of the population disappeared over 10 years. You know, if 11.2% of the population of Pennsylvania disappeared, it would mean everybody in Philadelphia packed up and moved to New Jersey.
You know, and the counties surrounding Susquehanna, except for Lackawanna, all lost. Lackawanna, which also shows that the projections, the interim projections over every couple of years don't always work out. They were projecting a loss of Lackawanna County and the loss for the city of Scranton, and both gained. Small, but they gained. But the loss in
Susquehanna County is very interesting. First of all, it's a very pretty county. From the viewpoint of enjoying nature, living in a place where there's no crowding, where the beautiful mountains, where the air used to be beautiful, you can't want more than you got in Susquehanna County. That's number one. Number two, in terms of profit produced per capita, Susquehanna County is the richest county in Pennsylvania because the oil and gas industry pumps $2 to $3 billion in after-tax profit out of Susquehanna County. But in terms of the people here, there's nothing here. There are no parks. There are no police. There are no sanitation. There's no jobs. There's no housing. What you have is an 11% drop in population, a catastrophic drop. In other words, the oil and gas industry has been a disaster in Susquehanna County.
Yeah, you got to say.
Although it's been very profitable for the owners of Cabot Gas.
Yeah, if it was so great, why are people leaving Susquehanna County?
Yeah.
And that somebody should, make that point.
Anthropologists, if you study anthropology or you study prehistory, the teachers will tell you that in judging the success or failures of civilizations, you can judge it by population growth. Civilizations where you have a steady growth of population, these are successful civilizations that benefit humanity. Civilizations that collapse are civilizations that can't sustain their population. Well, what are you going to say about Susquehanna County and the oil and gas industry?
Yeah. You're talking about things that I've just read in a book called Sapiens by Yuval Harari. Yeah. He talks about that and where places grow and places don't. But it wasn't just Susquehanna County. You know, the southwestern part of Pennsylvania, which is heavy into oil and gas, they've lost population as well, almost every county out there.
Well, we join Nigeria, we join Ecuador, we join all the extractive areas of the world that are subjected to the rule of the oil and gas industries, every one of which suffers health, suffers loss of people, suffers increased deaths, and exploitation increased immensely, and huge amounts of profits sucked out. Every place it has the same characteristics.
Extraction industries are not good industries in the long run.
No, and Pennsylvania is the extractive industry long-term capital of America. Right?
Coal and oil.
Oil.
Yeah.
And the industry began here.
Yeah. Yep. Titusville.
None of it has ever been to the long-term benefit of the state.
Right.
And yet, look at the wealth that was produced for others that came out of here at the expense of the people who live here.
That's something. You know, we didn't work this pre-show, but I do want to mention a gentleman passed away this week from Lackawanna County, former commissioner Ray Alberigi. I didn't know Ray very well. He was county commissioner for three or four terms. Before that, he was in. He also held a courthouse position, but when he was the commissioner, and this goes to the role of government, he and his partner Joe Corcoran built a lot of things in Lackawanna County. They saw that Montage Mountain was built. They brought in the baseball team. They built the stadium for the baseball team. They started this Lackawanna Valley Heritage, the walking trail. They boosted there was a county nursing home, all sorts of things that over the years have been dismantled or privatized out of the public, but wouldn't have been there if government didn't back them in the first place. And, every night during the summertime, if you watch baseball, you get Scranton mentioned on broadcast because of its AAA baseball team. Those kind of people in government, are on the wane. We have this debate writ large nationally about what government can and should do. And, the infrastructure bill is a good example of that. And bring it back to Pat Toomey, who doesn't think that we should be investing in things like that if it's going to cost his class of people tax money.
That's right. Well, this debate is going to be going on, although the Congress is in recess now, right?
I think so, but I'm not sure. They may. I think they are. Nancy Pelosi needs some time to work her. This infrastructure bill.
Yeah. Well, the recess, I think, will go on for about 4 weeks. They don't come back until September.
But the problems go on.
The problems go on. And we'll have plenty about problems to talk about next week. So I'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.